This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana, and the region that we call Acadiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses across the country, functioning as their complete IT department. From networks to phones, hosting of servers, and a service-oriented help desk, Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. If you're wondering if Raider could help your growing business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com, or even better, stop by their offices and see the team in action. One of my favorite things about being host of Discover Lafayette is getting to know the people behind the successful businesses that we enjoy here in Lafayette and Acadiana. Today is no exception. I'm very proud to welcome Chris Raider, CEO of Raider Solutions, to our show. And Chris, before we start, I'd like to provide a brief bio, a background on your business, and then we'll jump in and talk about how you ended up here.
Sounds great. Thanks, okay. Jamie.
Chris Raider was exposed to the fundamentals of the building supply business at an early age while working in his family's lumber business in South Louisiana. After college, Chris returned to the family business to help streamline operations with improved technology. Among these improvements was the implementation of an enterprise-wide computer system. Chris later joined a national LBM software company and implemented computer systems nationwide. After realizing that customers needed more than just an information processing system, Chris founded Raider Solutions in June 1998. His first two clients were located in Houston, Texas, in Los Angeles, California, and have both been sold to Fortune 500 companies. His goal has been for his customers to continue to improve their bottom line and meet their financial objectives through a balanced use of technology, education, and training. Chris has worked on site with over 500 building supply companies in 45 states. Today, Chris Raider and his staff of 22 full-time employees manage information technology for over 150 companies, fast-growing energy, medical, and manufacturing-related companies anchored in South Louisiana, and 65 regional building supply dealers based throughout the United States. And we're actually here in the beautiful headquarters of Raider Solutions, Chris. Thank you.
You're welcome,
for being
Jen.
Here today. Yeah, this is... I have to say, this is such a pleasure. We're in the awesome Light Center in Lafayette, and it's—I feel techie just sitting here. Although I'm definitely outclassed.
Well, there's a lot of technology moving around in this building at all times.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Chris, we got to know each other. I think we kid about this at the bus stop. Our daughters both all attended the Academy of the Sacred Heart, and then I got to know you on a business level, and it's just been a pleasure partnering with you, and it's an honor to have you on the show today. So why don't we back up and talk about where you grew up and how you ended up here with Raider Solutions in Lafayette.
Right. Well, that was a great intro. I grew up in New Iberia, one of four children, and my mother and my father had a lumberyard there called Norris Raiders, and I worked there as a child. Growing up in the business, stocking the shelves, waiting on the customers, cutting the grass, cleaning the restrooms, ordering the inventory. And then I was always fascinated with computers. And I was involved in science projects in high school, in sports. But I went to the International Science Fair. And we didn't discuss this ever, but I had a project on, I think it was 12 characteristics of 12 types of wood. And I analyzed the data in computers.
Wow.
And I came back out and... it was some real simple test, and I just, at that time, my father bought me an Apple computer, and I just fell in love with computers at the time, and I was about 16 years old.
What year was that, if we can date you?
It was 1994.
So that was really on the cusp.
That is not correct. It was 1984.
84. So you were really, yes. Was that a Lisa? What was it called?
I mean, no, it was an Apple.
It was an Apple.
It was an Apple II, or it wasn't an Apple IIe, it was Apple II.
So you were really early
it was very
in the
early.
Game
yes.
to be fascinated with that.
So I remember, you know, some children got a car when they were 15. I got a computer.
Well, that might have been a better investment. I mean,
I'd been happy to have a car, but I got a computer.
Right. So then you ended up at Spring Hill College. Right. And what did you study there, Chris?
I studied, it's called Computer Information Systems. Today, we call that Management Information Systems or Informatics at other schools. So it's a half computer science curriculum, and it's half business curriculum.
Right. So did you know, I mean, you knew that you wanted to be in this, this type of business.
I knew I wanted to study computers. And then my first job outside, when I graduated from Spring Hill was in Detroit, Michigan, working for EDS, which is Electronic Data Systems. Mm-hmm. And we worked at General Motors. And I was in the truck and bus group, managing a HR system with about 20 other people. It took that many people to manage this, just the HR function of that division of General Motors, which was the largest company of the world at that time.
So did you know much about HR, or you really just knew the nuts and bolts of computing?
No, I didn't know anything about HR. It was a learning experience. It was all about computers and running reports and providing data for the HR staff.
So they would provide the parameters, and then you would, you and your team.
We supported the software and the hardware for those systems, and not just in Detroit or the surrounding area of Detroit, but wherever the plants were in the country. Which was really exciting for to come from New Iberia and go to Detroit.
I know.
What a transition that was.
Right. So then what happened? I mean, I know you went back to school later, so you stayed there a few years.
Yeah, I stayed there a year, and my father asked me to come home and put a computer system in. And I did, and we looked, went through a process and selected some software in a company in Denver, Colorado. It was a company that we chose. And then I began implementing the system and putting it into my family's business. And it was about a 1 or 2 year project. And I fell in love with it. I didn't know that people were paid to actually put software in lumberyards. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'd do this for free. So I tried to take the GMAT 3 times. This is an interesting story.
Yeah.
And the first time we had been hit by a freeze, which was tough because we were the only, we were on the, one of the few companies in New Iberia that had plumbing and electrical and all the other supplies that necessary during a freeze, more so the plumbing. So that Saturday had to stay and help people get supplies so they could get their water back, turn their water back on at their homes. So that was the first time. So I said, I'm determined to take it. And I had another event happen one more time. And then the third time, we were hit by a hurricane called Hurricane Andrew. And after that hurricane hit, we had to work. My family was working 24 hours a day before that. The facility was running 24 hours. And in the electricity, we had generators and we couldn't run them 24 hours. And families were displaced and only half the staff was there. And there was many times of business. And it was like a war zone. So 100 days later, I left the business and went hiking on the Appalachian Trail.
Just to survive, just to get yourself
to
back.
To get my mind clear after working 100 days in a row.
Yeah, that was a bear of a hurricane.
And while I was on the trail, I ended up taking the, not while I was on the trail, I hiked the trail for about 6 weeks, pretty much the whole state of Maine. I started up in Mount Katahdin, up in Acadia National Park, I think it is, and hiked south. And then I ended up calling the computer company in Denver. And they said they would allow me to work with them, which was great for them and for me. And I started out working with them, took the GMAT to get into graduate school.
What is that?
Graduate Management Aptitude Test.
Okay, you can tell I've never
applied. That's the entrance exam. It's like the LSAT, but it's called the GMAT. It's not for law school. It's for business school. And then I got accepted into the day program at Vanderbilt in Nashville. And then I really loved what I was doing. I was traveling all over the country putting software in these lumberyards. And they said I could go to the executive program on weekends. And I was a young man, maybe 25 or so, 26. So I would fly in and out of Nashville for 22 months. And I would go to a company and help them with their computer systems and
head off to
head off to school.
What an exciting time, though.
It was a great time.
Yeah. And so, like a small town boy, New Iberia boy does well, huh?
From that must New have been Iberia exciting. The funny stories in New York City and LA and then rural areas too, smaller than New Iberia.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just the it wasn't just lumberyards. It was different types of businesses. But I think the most exciting part was seeing different parts of the country and working with these people in these small businesses. And realize that a lot of the things are doing the same. It's just different cultures.
At that time, were most of those, I don't want to say mom and pops, but they were family-owned businesses, I'm assuming, computerization kind of came and probably surprised them.
Yeah, a number of these I actually hand-keyed in their inventory and their accounting systems for them. It was the first time we had run computer cables in some of these buildings. We ran I ran those cables for them, put the ends on the cables, loaded the software on the computers. Some of them were migrations, but early on, it was from the ground up. It's the first time they'd seen a computer. Yes, that is correct.
So you didn't only have to computerize the inventory, but you had to train them on how to turn on the equipment and
absolutely
how to find it, find what they needed. You know, I worked, I'm not a computer person, but I worked with computers in the late 80s, early 90s on the government end. I set up computer programs here in Louisiana, Georgia, and then nationally for mortgage filings, UCC. Right. And I remember we're sitting in a room probably the same size as where the AS400, there was a computer that had to be totally at the right temperature. I'm sure that my watch holds more data now than that computer did, but
probably
it was worth a fortune, and it was priceless because it gathered data that we had been unable to gather before from various parts of the state. And I remember the exciting feeling of we're transforming banking. It was, for me, that was transformative, just like you were transforming businesses to make them more profitable. And I know that's one of your passions.
So, So I did that for a number of years. And I just, again, I mean, I need to state this. I couldn't believe that I was paid to do that.
To do what
I would have
loved.
Done that for free. I would have paid to do it. So not only would I have done it for free, it's just so exciting. And growing up in the business, a lot of these companies we're working with were family businesses, so I had seen the same things they were seeing. You know, as a family business in town, there was a lumberyard, grocery store, bank, gas station. We were one of the groups that was important to these communities, just as these companies I was working with.
Right. So you ended up becoming a business owner. That led to you forming Ready Solutions.
Here's what happened. You know, I was traveling all over the country, and there was a manufacturing company in Houston, Texas, that I was working at one day. And I had to leave Houston and fly to LA to work with a drywall distributor. And during that flight, each one of those companies had some major opportunities. And without getting into too much details, they were all financial. Opportunities like balancing out inventories, automating purchasing, changing pricing, specific to those businesses in that industry. And I remember, you know, at this time I'd graduated from Vanderbilt, and I really wanted to use all these tools I'd learned in graduate school in the real world. And I was along the way, but I convinced both these companies, or they convinced me, it was a true partnership. That if I went into business for myself, I could work 1 week in Houston with one company and 1 week in Los Angeles with the other.
Gosh.
And that's how I started. So I would spend a whole week in Houston, then I would spend a week in Los Angeles. And at the time, I lived in Youngsville.
And it's not easy to fly out. I mean, it's not bad, but it's, you don't just hop on a plane from here.
Well, it was before 911, so you could actually arrive at the airport.
Well, pretty close to the time.
You could arrive at the airport 15 minutes before the flight would leave, and you could still get on the flight.
Which I did all the time.
So you remember those days. And they agreed to do it, and then I ended up moving to Houston. My wife and I, we had our first child. And we ended up moving, we moved to Houston. So I was in Houston 1 week at home and in LA 1 week. And both those companies grew significantly.
Oh, so your responsibilities were growing at the same time.
So they had great people. They were hiring great people. I was contributing. I was learning. I was growing. And we set up the first VPN in about 1998, a virtual private network between Houston and Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Houston and Reno, Nevada. The company had opened two more locations since then, and they were assembling door units and shipping them all over the country. And I learned a lot about manufacturing also at that time. They were doing real-time manufacturing, so there was no work in process, and we would actually build everything that day and put it into the trucks.
You'd need orders,
So there was, and we would receive orders same day and ship them same day, and that was amazing. And that was 20 years ago,
right?
So, and then the company in LA was growing. They were in the Phoenix and Vegas and these hot housing markets, and it was like a sports game every day when they would open the doors. It was so busy, and I got to travel to all their locations. They ended up with 40 locations before they ended up selling their company.
Gosh.
So they went from 10 to 40. So that was a lot of fun. So I'd been to most, I think I'd been to all of them actually.
So you were trying to balance this, their work and the home situation.
Balance work and home,
And, how'd that go?
Well, you know, if I tell you it was perfect, you would say that's impossible. And it was not perfect, but my wife, Jenny, you know, we had an agreement that she would follow me anywhere in my career when we got married, as long as we could move home. And one day she asked me to move home, and I said, fine.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is, and I would, you know, if anyone travels like I did, I would say when you're traveling, travel and work. You know, do what you need to do for your job. And mm-hmm. then when you get home, be at home.
Be home.
Be home. Yeah. Not just physically, but mentally. And try to turn your phone off if you can. Mm-hmm. So that worked pretty well.
And that's a growth curve. I mean, it's hard, I think, as a young business professional. You want to excel. You want to get ahead, and families can pay the price.
And when I started, I was the only person, right? So if there was a problem, I had to figure it out. I had nobody behind me to look to at all.
So you opened, you started Raider Solutions in, was it 1998?
Yeah, June the 1st of 98.
Right. So that was a big leap.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So talk about that. I mean, you decided to move home.
Well, I graduated from Vanderbilt, and actually that was an interesting year. I graduated from a graduate school. I was working for the software company. I ended up taking a job in South Carolina with a consulting firm for about 3 months, which I hated. So I ended up going back home. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to work for the computer company in a consulting role. So I had three jobs, graduated from graduate school that year, and we were married that year. Mm-hmm. So all of that happened in 1 year. And, you know, I guess the rest is history. But early on, I would just fly out with my laptop computer. We did not have the internet as we have it today. Mm-hmm. So if something was wrong or broken, I would have to
fly out
there and fix it.
Yeah. And if I remember right, Chris, your early clients were, they weren't in Acadiana. You were servicing clients all over the country. And you've since, you're working locally also, but you were based here, but not
correct.
Working
so
in
we,
Acadiana.
Right. We ended up moving home, mm-hmm. and my business grew by referrals. So I had, I guess the next customer was in Nashville, Tennessee. And then I had one in North Carolina. And then you just keep going to different mm-hmm. places. They would speak at the conferences and say, hey, call this guy. He helped us. And then we hired our first employee and then our next employee. Uh-huh. And we were still working only with Lumberyards until about 2007. And Acadiana was immune to the housing crash that happened in 2008.
Right.
Our housing starts in this country went from 2 million at that time to 500,000. I mean, that's a big number, big drop.
75%. And it was booming here still before the financial market.
Still booming
meltdown,
here. And I remember riding on a flight from LA to Houston, and then up Houston to Lafayette, but LA to Houston with a friend of mine from high school. And he asked, why don't you do work with other types of businesses? And I said, why would we? We're so busy. Mm-hmm. He said, well, why don't you come talk to our company? And it was a generator company in New Iberia. And we talked to them, and we ended up becoming the IT department for them, which was our first customer that was not a Lumberyard. And now, as you noted on there, I think 50% or more, mm-hmm. about 50% of our business is not Lumberyards anymore. It's medical, energy, manufacturing, local companies in Louisiana, law, mm-hmm. accounting, insurance, local companies in Louisiana. And some of them have a national footprint, but they're based here. Uh-huh. And what's interesting is the manufacturing company I worked with in Houston really taught me about compressing time. I mean, we were building these door units and shipping them same day. And some of the companies that we work with are high growth, and they're always trying to compress time. So we set our company up to allow that for them through the way we manage their services.
Right.
Which is a little interesting because it's not something that a lot of computer companies that I know of, if any, are mm-hmm. doing.
Can we back up and, you know, let's explain what Raider Solutions offers, because I know you're talking about servers and tracking goods and all, but what, like, if somebody was going to call you, whether it's an accounting firm or a lumber yard or whatever, I guess the nuts and bolts are pretty much the same. Tell us what you and your employees offer.
So what we do is we are their IT department. And what this means is we provide all the equipment for their company, including the phones, the firewalls, the switches, every piece of equipment on the network, and the servers. We host servers for them. We started hosting actually when I worked with the company in California early on, and we didn't even know what we were doing. We just had servers in our office, and we let them log into them, mm-hmm. and that's how the word hosting came about. We were hosting their data. So today, picture companies typically with 20 to maybe 250, right. 500 employees. We have some more than that, but most 80% of our business is within probably the 2,200, 300 range of employees, and they do not have an IT person. It's us.
Right.
So we do right. everything related to IT for them. They completely outsource their IT to us.
So if the equipment breaks down, you
take
you
care of it.
Fix it. If the communication arm, I know we were talking earlier, Jason Sikora and I, our producer here, you know, people get funny looking emails or, you know, sketchy things happen on the computer, you're able to help them identify what might need to be done.
Correct.
That is scary if you don't have someone on site.
Right.
It's frightening when there's a problem with the computer.
And we did it backwards, right? And it's been a great thing. Mm-hmm. We started here, and we had customers that were national or outside of our area. Some of them are national, but outside of our area. So we learned from an early stage how to get it right every time, all the time, so that when we ship something to them, it's correct. So a lot of companies start in a local area, which most of them do.
Yeah, and then they start
grow. So they may not know how to service that person that's away. And what we always say is we talk about the word relationship. A lot of businesses do. But we try to make sure that those people in those desks that we're working with think they're in the office mm-hmm. right next to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires us to answer the phone. The most difficult thing we do today, Jan, is answer the phone
and listen to what they need. Huh?
What, can you believe that?
Well, I think it's a little bit more detailed than that, but yeah, I believe it. So let's say you have a customer in Nashville, which
right.
I'm sure you do, and you're redoing their office or you're computerizing a new level mm-hmm. of technology. You ship everything out? Do you send someone with them or do you have contract people that set them up?
We do both. Oh. It depends on the client. Most everything we send now is plug and play.
Mm-hmm.
Since everything is hosted, whether on our servers or other servers, it's just a matter of providing a vehicle for that data to get to the server, mm-hmm. a PC, a thin client, a laptop, a smartphone.
Right.
And we can connect to all of those remotely also, which is unbelievable.
Right.
To think that most of this is driven by software. A thin client, for example, if it breaks, you just pull another one out of the closet and plug it in, you're good to go.
Right.
A thin client's a device that emulates it's like a PC, except there's no moving parts in it. It controls no data. It just allows you to access a server.
Wow.
You can have Word, Excel, Power, all your Microsoft programs as well as your other software, but that's being served up in the cloud. But to the user, they don't know that. They think it's on their desktop, but it's not. There's no data on it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, on a side note, we had a customer in Mississippi a few years ago. Someone walked into their building and stole three of their thin clients. And the police and the company were so concerned. It was a medical company. And they thought they were going to have to file all kind of HIPAA reports. And we're like, there's no data.
There's nothing on
there's
it.
There's no data on those devices. Let them, and they can't log in with them. Let them have them.
So it's just like stealing
right.
a TV without having electricity to plug
but,
it in.
But back to your original question. We like to go to a company at least once.
Uh-huh.
If at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. And get to know the people, see kind of who you're dealing with.
And then
with.
We attempt to visit with them about once a year. I do a lot of professional speaking.
We're going to get into that.
And when I go to these conferences, I see a lot of these people that we work with, and that's mm-hmm. great. Sometimes I go to a conference and see half a dozen or a dozen customers.
Right.
But we still try to reach them at least once a year.
Right. So we're here, like I said, in the Light Center in Lafayette. You're a national company, and we can move into the speaking. When I read your full bio, Chris, I have to confess, I want to apologize. I knew what you did. I knew that you're a community person and you're highly giving to the community. But I had no idea about the level of talks that you give at conferences. And I highlighted my favorite one was, how to skinny up expenses and fatten up sales, you know.
Right.
But there's a consistent theme about facing the competition, define your field, margin, operations, and technology management. All of your talks are about maximizing the bottom line through the use of technology.
Correct.
Which is why you're in business, but so many people, you know, they're not able to get outside of their field and learn how to actually grow their business. They're just
Correct.
Trying to get through the day, like you said, get their orders out or, you know, meet that client's needs. And it looks like, I guess your MBA led you to this. You really focus on how to maximize profits for all of your clients.
Right. I mean, we put ourselves in their shoes on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And some clients we've been working with for 15 years or more, or at least 10 years or more, Some of them even share their financials with me just to get my opinion and say, hey, what do you think about this? Mm-hmm. And that's quite an honor.
What do you tell them?
Well, it depends.
Not much.
What should you do? One guy the other day told me how great his numbers were, and I just met him. He wasn't even a customer. And he said, what should I do? I said, I should get in my car and go back home. You're doing so well.
Oh, he really was doing well.
Yeah, he was. But that's not always the case. Since we started with the business side, not the technology side. Mm-hmm. I just understood the technology.
Right.
But today we are a true technology company. There's no doubt about that. But we always pay attention to business. So I was telling someone the other day, we will implement your systems and your software, whether you're adding a new location or completely changing your whole network, and we will do it with respect to your business.
Uh-huh.
Meaning we're not going to send you into a tizzy or something. Because, the greatest, the IT people are known for breaking stuff.
They are?
Fixing stuff and breaking stuff. Right.
Yeah. How so?
Well, they update your software.
Breaking the office rhythms or something?
Well, they'll update your software and go home, right? I think it's working.
And there are ripples throughout system always.
So anyway, we try to avoid that. And we do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, they're lucky to have you. I mean, I just, we met, I want to give a little background on this. Got to know each other. We had met through our children, but you've been very generous with Upper Lafayette Economic Development.
Right.
And I know that you're on so many other boards. You just came in today from a home bank board meeting. You're very active in the community, your own college, Spring Hill College. And then locally, United Way of Acadiana, and your employees, Jason and others, have poured themselves into helping United Way raise money through
Correct.
The gumbo cook-off, through the chili cook-off.
Correct.
I know there are a lot of things I don't know, and the list goes on and on. You were chair of the Board of Trustees at the Academy of the Sacred Heart in Grand Coteau, on the board of directors in the past for the Lafayette Community Healthcare Clinic, serving our most, not needy, but most in need, most in most deserving of help to get healthcare. You've worked on the Louisiana Innovation Council, bringing jobs to Louisiana, and you're a graduate of Leadership Louisiana.
Correct.
You've really spread yourself out, not too thin, but in ways that impact quality of life for people. And I don't know how you do it with all your travel. But.
Well, early on, I think the first 10 years, I traveled constantly,
mm-hmm.
right? So every week I was gone pretty much. And at some point I had to slow down. My children were growing and I wanted to spend more time with them. And I started spending more time in Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me the opportunity to start helping in the areas that you just mentioned.
Yeah, at their school,
right.
Local United Way efforts
Correct.
And all. But.
So, I've always wanted to give back.
Uh-huh.
But it's so hard to give back when you're a young person and you don't have much to give.
Yeah, time or money.
Right, time or money. And you're so concerned about just trying to figure out how you're going to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people ahead of me that have taught me how to give, but I never could do it until, the last 10, 15 years.
Uh-huh.
So it's an honor to do this and a privilege. And the other thing that makes it possible is the people that work here, because they are constantly taking care of our business, and they have the same respect for our community that I have, such that when there's someone in need and we can do something to help them,
mm-hmm.
we just go out and do it.
Yeah.
We'd like to just do it all the time. It's interesting. We supported and ran the chili cook-off
mm-hmm.
last year and then the gumbo cook-off. And someone the other day said, "What is your business?" I said, "We're actually in the cooking business."
cooking up solutions
yeah. So but it was pretty funny because we're at the gumbo cook-off signing up people for the chili cook-off and
I
still
know.
trying to take phone calls and take care of our customers and
yeah
talk about
I mean
IT
you've got
services.
To keep all this going with some income, which I know you do, there's no issue there,
right.
But it's just been interesting to watch you because you really could just be working 80-100 hours a week on your business.
Right.
And I see you out doing things. And like I said, it's not just you, Chris, but it's your staff.
Right.
I mean, your employees, your support team, your leaders here
right.
are out with you, which I think, that's one reason I wanted to do this podcast.
Right.
You've got a kind heart.
Well, thank you.
And I don't know that a lot of people know you locally. They might see you at some of these
right.
meetings, but you do work on the road so much.
Right.
It's not like if I go in my bank, you're not the teller or the
right.
the bank president that's there every day. You're
right.
on the road
Correct.
With your business. So, it's
Yeah, so that's interesting. And
and a New Iberia native, along with J.D. Regard and other, well-known gadabouts.
We have some characters that came out of New Iberia. Fill in the blank. I hope he's listening to this.
Well, he better be. We'll make him listen.
It is interesting. You know, every time I get on an airplane out of Lafayette, I usually see somebody I know on the plane.
Yeah.
Or if I'm in Atlanta or Dallas or Houston, mm-hmm. Changing planes to fly back home, I'll usually see somebody. Mm-hmm. And we talk. And there's a group of people. There's a big group of people who travel out of Lafayette, actually. If you go to the airport, mm-hmm. which may be interesting, to go to the airport like on a Monday morning.
People watch.
For about the first 2 hours, and you'll see the same, majority of those people, the same people you'll see the next Monday morning.
Where are they flying to? Do you know, like locally? Mm.
Some of them are flying to New York. There's some big medical companies here now. Mm-hmm. Schumacher, LHC Group, those guys are filling the planes. I mean, they have thousands of employees. And then our oil economy, right? These guys are flying and girls are flying all over the world.
Right.
And that's many companies that, a lot of oil has moved out of here. We don't do as much deep sea, water drilling as we did in the past, in the last 5 years, but the services companies are still mm-hmm. here. So that requires people. And those people travel all over the world. They're tugboat captains, mm-hmm. as an example. People that work 7 on, 7 off, 30 on, 30 offs in some foreign country.
Yeah.
So you'll see those people, but they're not on the they're not on the Monday morning and the Friday night flights. Those are the people that are typically working in the businesses. Because businesses usually run 8 to 5,
right?
Monday through Friday. So.
Right. I thought about you recently. There was some meltdown with scheduling pilots during the holidays, and I thought, well, they should have had Raider Solutions on board with all that,
Absolutely.
That's a mess up, huh? But that's what happens in business when things go awry. They don't it's not just a little mess up. That's a big ripple across a lot of people's lives during the holidays. So
we're so dependent on these computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, someone made a change. This is American Airlines. Someone made a change.
Not a client of yours, but...
No. And it's okay. I mean, we can talk about them. It's public information. It's not a bad... I mean, we're not talking about...
Oh, it happens to everyone,
right.
too.
So they made a change to the software, and it basically opened up the vacation for everybody, not just those that were either due or could take vacation.
So everybody opted into vacation.
Everybody opted in, and so many people opted in that they had nobody to fly the planes, or as many pilots as necessary, so... That's I see that as a Saturday Night Live skit coming
up.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. We might end up flying the planes too. Huh?
Right.
Which would be a nightmare.
But to show how important the pilots are, right? Mm-hmm. But the pilots are dependent on the computers to allow them to make the decisions.
Right.
And that something happened with the computers. So uh-huh. So the passengers could have potentially suffered. It's a good thing that they found the problem before, before the day that it happened.
Right. Well, while we're looking ahead into the future, do you have any thoughts about where your industry is heading? Like, it's changed so much since you were a young student, to computerization, to now this, the internet. I know you're a proud client of LUS Fiber locally, and you're dependent on high-speed 24/7 access to internet. What are you looking ahead? Like, do you think your company's vision is... What are you looking ahead to, I guess, is the question.
So let me make a few comments on that. We do run our networks on LUS Fiber Local, and we have thousands of people, as I'm speaking to you now, that are logged into servers of the data center in this building that we also manage that are coming through on LUS Fiber. Mm-hmm. And it has been solid. It works great. And we were early adapters. Mm-hmm. We've been on it for many, many years.
You've spoken to me about that you were dependent on the best service.
And LUS does not sponsor this program.
No.
But it works. And mm-hmm. it works all the time. And that's good for us. So what's happened is we're transformed into a security and a utility company. Raider Solutions is. Basically, we're making sure everyone's data is secure. And we're making sure we're transporting it as they need to. What that means is when they log into that server has to be available. It has to always be online. They don't know where the server's located, but they have to be able to get to it in a secure way, whether they come mm-hmm. in from their phone or their laptop or PC uh-huh. or from another server. And
it's all invisible to your clients.
Yeah,
they trust that you're doing this.
Right. It's invisible to them. But it's interesting. In the last 18 months, I would say there have been so many companies that have been hacked, including government agencies, Equifax, school systems, sheriff's departments. Mm-hmm. Uber.
Yeah.
Uber recently. No one's immune to this.
Right.
And we're spending more time today on security than we ever have. And it's like an exercise program. We can't just work on it on one day and then forget about it. It's something we're constantly monitoring. We have what we think are some of the best tools in the industry. We know we have some of the best people. And that's evident when you walk through here, the people you've met, Jan, and the people that interact on the phone. But it takes the people, it takes the technology, and then we also have to train our users. Mm-hmm. And we're also fortunate because since we have 22 employees and right north of 100, 125 companies, we have enough people that we can still manage them. It's not like we have thousands of companies and thousands of employees. And you still could with that number of employees. It's just we're very close to them.
Right.
Every one of them. So it makes a difference, especially when we have had to have a lot of training in the last year or so in how to approach email, how to approach websites. Mm-hmm. We have all the technology and everything in the background trying to stop people from going to sites they shouldn't, download things they shouldn't.
But like on their off time, huh?
Right.
Like,
but I can't stop someone from sitting on an airplane and writing their password and login on the system and giving it to the person next to them. I just can't stop that. I'm using that as an extreme example. So we're trying to constantly keep their skill levels up as it relates to security.
Right, right. So do you diagnose it for them, or do people call you in a panic? Is it a combination of things?
It's a combination. We get phone calls, anything from, I clicked on this email and I don't think I should have, to...
those are probably, ooh. Right.
My internet's running slow because I've been attacked. Or we'll make a phone call and say, we've received an alert that your email has been blocked or your internet has been blocked because you went to this site.
Uh-huh.
So then we'll call them and step through it with them.
What do you tell people, Chris? I'm just wondering, what are some of the common things people do that invite problems? Is it shopping? Like, is it just surfing the internet for news that is kind of sketchy? Or like, where do you get?
So here's a few, here's just some things. And I have a whole hour presentation on this, which is what we should do for all of the groups. We probably need to pare it down for Kiwanis, Rotary, local clubs, but just to whatever their time limit is, 30 minutes. But we ask them not to open emails they're not familiar with. That's the first thing. Never log in or use wireless access at a public place.
What happens?
That's new to people. Well,
Like you're at CC's or something.
If you're at CC's, we could sit in the coffee shop next to you and sniff your login and your password and then give it to you. Now, that's scary, right?
Yeah.
But because you're running on that public wireless network, it can be done. We recommend you use your 4G card or your whatever connection that you have.
Are there dishonest people out there?
I'm
so naive too.
But do you lock your house?
Yes.
Okay.
And my car doors.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that's an example.
Jim Kraft, that used to be our police chief, he'd always say downtown, most of the thefts, thieves just go by and they just look for cars that are unlocked. They don't even worry about locked cars and they get a lot. It's a bounty. But I never think about it when I'm at a place using free wireless.
I don't use wireless anywhere except in our building. And credit cards, they're so easy to steal. I recommend anything on your bank statement or your credit card, every time you make a charge, have it text you or email you so you know. That's great. I mean, everybody should do that. I was at Hub City Diner about a couple of months ago. We remodeled the kitchen at our house and I ate out quite a bit, so I go to Hub City every morning with the...
They do have good breakfast.
I call them the old guys. They're just a little bit older than me. But anyway, we'd sit at the counter, and I showed them how they could receive a notification every time they charge their credit card. And you would think they're technology gurus now. So now when you go there, they give them the
Jimmy's
credit card.
Got it, yeah.
And they show, look, I just got a message that they use my credit card.
Yeah.
That's a confirmation. Another thing is when
that
you log
you.
In...
Yeah.
When you're logging into your email, have your IT company, if it's us, we'll do this if we haven't done it already, or whoever you use for your IT services, have them give you what we call two-factor authentication. You can't just put a login and a password in. You have to put a login and a password first, and then not even a question, have it send a code or something to you that's unique at that time. And then you have so many seconds to log in. And the reason why that'll stop people is if someone uses a program or someone gets your login and your password, even though they can put your login and your password in, that text will probably go to your cell phone or something that hopefully they don't have.
Right.
And then you have to have that code to punch in to actually access the servers.
Is that something a lot of people do? You know, this extra authentication?
It's happening more and more right now. Most banks' business accounts, if not all, I don't want to say all, but let's say most, have that security built into them.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. There's so much. You're right. We could do a separate interview.
There's just more about, items. Yeah. I'm just using those few as an example.
Right. Well, you could live anywhere with the work you're doing. I know that your wife wanted to be home, but in fact, you probably could twist your arm and move somewhere. Can you talk about Lafayette and why you're here?
So we could live anywhere in the United States, actually. And so can anybody, actually.
Well, yeah, Jason here. I know I want to get in a plug again for Jason Segura. He was sound person for Britney Spears. Right. I mean, and
I was a guitar tech for her in 2004. And I think by 2008 with Goo Goo Dolls, I'd hit all 50 states.
Yep.
I had to look them up. I hate to say it, but they are cool. Goo Goo Dolls. Yeah. Yep. I knew Britney Spears because my daughters, you know, that she's like the icon of their generation. But
even that job, you could live anywhere in the United States and do that job.
Well, certainly, especially out west, you know. Yeah. I mean, y'all could be anywhere, especially near a major, like I'm talking about a hub airport, like, you know, Dallas or Atlanta.
It'd be a lot easier. But I tell you, I grew up here. I have roots here. I still have family here, but my mother and my father are still living. My wife's parents are living. And I've traveled, I haven't been to all 50 states. I've been to 47, actually, or 47. So I've got three more to go.
What, North Dakota?
No, I've been there. Montana, Hawaii, and Alaska.
Oh, you saved the best.
So, save the best for last. Mm-hmm. But we have so much here that we should be proud of. And number one is something that it's hard to duplicate. I don't know that you can. It's our culture. It's the people here. Mm-hmm. It's that mentality of getting oil out of the ground that flows into all these other businesses. You know, I think you drop a guy off in a helicopter in the middle of Russia and you give him a toolbox and you say, get the oil out of the ground. And if he's a Cajun, he's going to figure it out somehow.
He's going to get it. Yeah. And make friends and cook for him while he's at it.
And, you know, our food, our festivals, many times, maybe once a month, at least one of our clients flies in and we'll have meetings with them. And then I take them out to Sipamo Point.
Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
We'll take them fishing, and we'll eat crabs and shrimp, boiled crabs and boiled shrimp, or crawfish if it's crawfish season. Mm-hmm. And those are things that you don't do in most parts of the rest of the country. Oh, we'll drive to Abbeville and get roysters.
Yeah, roysters.
So it's a lot of fun, but it's a great place to live.
And you are raising your beautiful family here. Yeah. I know that's they're precious to you.
UL is a great university here. We get a lot of students from there that come work here or internships. And if you look around when you drive away from here, there's a lot of technology buildings in our park here. Mm-hmm. And they're getting a lot of students from UL also. We have some strong, I named two medical companies earlier. We have some strong banks here.
Oh, gosh. Iberia Bank's one of the biggest.
Iberia Bank is a very large bank, number one in the state. The bank that Home Bank is number three in the state now, today, or tomorrow will be.
Oh.
Once the merger is complete, hopefully that'll finish up without any issues. So hopefully that'll take place. And there's more and more companies. I think it's that entrepreneurial spirit that comes out of Lafayette. And not just Lafayette, South Louisiana.
Right. I love what Greg Gautreaux with Lita says, that wildcatter mentality. Mm-hmm. But you go back to the oil and gas, the early days, but you can see it with healthcare, with your industry, technology, people that are, they'll do what it takes to make a business a success and to provide a good service. Yep.
And I'll tell you, a company we didn't mention that probably needs to be mentioned is Acadian Ambulance.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I see those
Richard
guys.
Zuschlag.
I see those guys everywhere. Mm-hmm. They do such a great job. They have, I don't know how many thousands of employees they have.
Right.
But they're all over Louisiana. They're in Mississippi now. And then they're in Texas. Mm-hmm. They have quite a bit of, they have a huge presence in Texas, maybe as big as Louisiana, if not bigger.
Right.
So, and then they have safety. They have a safety division with those people all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. One of the reasons I started this podcast and TV show now, as you know, is to just, I think people know these names, but to really focus on, they're clustered right here. You know, Matt Stoller. CGI moving here. We have got an incredible hotbed of successful businesses and the culture.
Correct.
And I think, you know, having that collective pride is what I really think we need to be proud of where we are and take care of our community and ourselves.
In the four companies I mentioned, I look up to all those four leaders because those guys have been giving back to this community for years. And I hope one day I can give back as much as they do.
Well, you're on the way, Chris.
Right. But I mean, those guys are it's amazing what they're doing for our community through education or grants or providing employment for people.
Right.
But I mean, they really, when we have a major crisis in this city, whether it's a hurricane or something, those companies always step up and their employees are involved in a lot of different organizations.
Right. Yeah. It's a real honor, being associated with them. And,
So I'd love to go to a lunch or dinner with the four of them and compare notes. So.
And there's a lot of others we haven't mentioned, too, right. So we better leave it at that.
That's why I think what you're doing is so great. I hope that over the next year or two, you have a series you can put together as you continue and continue to find these people that are really making the gumbo of our community what it is.
Thank you.
Because the recipe is always changing, but it's always good.
Yeah. This might be about my 20th, 21st interview.
Okay.
We have, for people listening, discoverlafayette.net. Mm-hmm. You can see all of the interviews. And I've added a television show component to it, and it's a real pleasure getting to do this, and I'll plug my show at the end, but let's plug where can people find out more about Raider Solutions.
You can go to our website, www.raidersolutions.com, and I want to spell it for people, because when I'm listening to a radio show, I want to know how that URL is spelled. www.raider raidersolutions.com. And there's information on our website about the services we provide. And if they're interested, we'd be more than happy to help them.
Yeah, and I think in our intro, Jacob Landry, I wrote read some text, and I think he said they can drop by and visit you.
Absolutely. We'd love to do that. We love to go visit people. Yeah. It's our culture.
Yeah.
So if you have an IT problem, and on a real serious note, we have a lot of people that have security problems. We don't talk about them on the air. Because it's not something you should be doing. It's not very professional. But we do have confidential phone calls from a number of CEOs throughout the year who really have a major crisis. Mm-hmm. And we handle them delicately and try to help them get those resolved so that they don't happen again in the future.
Yeah. So, well, I can give a personal plug. I know with Upper Lafayette, we had some computer issues, and your team was quick, professional, and I was panicking. You know, it was the computer never crashes at 10 at night. It's always right before a big meeting presentation or something. And I can attest to the continuing professionalism through the years. So thank you for that, Chris. And I'd like to thank you for helping us by taping this here today. Jason Sakura, thank you for producing this podcast, Discover Lafayette. And Chris, thank you for your generosity. And for our listeners, I want to send you to, again, discoverlafayette.net. You can hear this podcast and all of our podcasts on our website, or you can also subscribe to our show on iTunes or any place where you get where you subscribe to podcasts. I'm Jan Swift with another episode of Discover Lafayette.